So how's that working?
Good afternoon. I'm opening a meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee on Thursday, March 26, 2015. Colleagues, we will have probably a shorter hearing today. We're going to have two public hearings on a couple of bills from members, which are going to be really exciting. And then we're going to start off, though, with a work session. We've got a bill that was directed our way, but now we're going to direct it another way. So, Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3492 without recommendation back to the...
I got to open the work session.
Open it up.
Yep. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3492.
Great.
Yes. Go for it.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3492 back without recommendation back to the Speaker for re-referral to the House Committee on Revenue.
Okay. Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 3492 without recommendation back to the Speaker for re-referral to the House Committee on Revenue. Is there discussion? And again, we're just doing it to redirect it where it needs to go. Any further discussion? Any objection? If not, the motion passes. All right, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3492 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2627. Beth, can you give the committee a short description of the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2627 would direct the Department of Energy to conduct a study of the state's return on investment in state programs to support clean energy generation, renewable energy generation, and energy efficiency. There is not yet a revenue or fiscal impact statement on the bill.
Okay, excellent. And we have two colleagues, former members of the Energy and Environment Committee, who are here today to talk about this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Ann Leininger, and I'm bringing this bill to you today for consideration as part of a team that includes my good colleague here and a couple of, at least one person here on the dais and another colleague. I'm bringing it because I'm an environmentalist who wants to be able to invest in green energy programs that make sense. And I'm bringing it because I think we need to make sure we're getting a good value for the public resources that we are shepherding and need to spend on the highest and best use. And because I think we're at an important pivot time for the Oregon Department of Energy. I think we all know that they've been going through a lot of transitions and challenges, and we need to make sure that the programs that they run provide a good benefit to our community and they make sense. So we have a nice bipartisan team on this. The bill would direct ODO to assess, using appropriate parameters, the community benefits that their green energy investments generate, so that we have the kind of information that we need to know which programs to continue, which programs possibly to discontinue, and any tweaks that need to be made. It would also, an amendment that should be on OLIS, would require ODO also, and this is through a conversation that I had with them, to define performance metrics for future use in their program, so that, you know, we'll take a look at how the programs that they run have been going, and then agree to some performance metrics that they'll use prospectively so that they can assess the merit of programs that they're running. And it would also, in some amendments that we're getting drafted right now with further input from ODO, it would direct them to use a third-party evaluator to do it so that, you know, everyone has the benefit of knowing that it's been an arm's-length assessment. It's an important pivot time for ODO as our research indicates, their annual budget is around $200 million. They've had some high-profile challenges with Shepherd Flats issue, the OSU-OIT solar installations investigation, a lot of executive director turnover. I think, you know, in the last 5 years, there have perhaps been four executive directors, but they have a new person in now who is a smart person, in my assessment. He's really eager to help establish good baselines and make sure that ODO is moving forward in a way that makes sense and with strength. And I've worked with them through two meetings to try to develop and define and focus this proposed bill so that it does things that they agree need to be done that would be beneficial in enabling us to make good decisions about where to put our investments and help the public feel good about the careful stewardship that we're trying to make of their resources. It's a transparency and accountability bill. In the House Revenue Committee, which pretty much all of us sit on, we talk a lot about how we need good information to make good decisions. We need accountability and transparency. So today I'm coming before you as someone who wants to invest in environmental protection programs in the form of green energy investments, energy efficiency investments, and I want to be able to point to some data when I argue in favor of those programs for why it makes sense and why it's a good use of public resources. I think the agency feels like it's a good time to do this type of thing, and I hope you will support it. We'll need to bring back amendments, though.
Yeah. And just so you know, under the meeting materials under this bill is some of the proposed amendment outlines that Rep. Leininger is working with ODO on.
Right. Good afternoon, Chair Vega Peterson, co-chairs and committee members, former committee members. My name is Gail Witsit. I represent House District 56, which is the southern half of Klamath and Lake counties to the California border. I'm really pleased to be here partnering with the good representative, and I'm going to make some comments. Mine are a little different, but they apply completely to this bill, as well as Rep. Benz's House Bill 3091, which hasn't been opened yet. But House Bill 2627 is about accountability, not only to the state legislature, but to the citizens of Oregon. This bill would provide citizens of the state with an accountability of how our tax dollars have been spent. They should help us as legislators determine if future dedications of tax dollars towards credits and incentives are providing a return on our investment. As Oregonians, we have been spending hundreds of millions of dollars on solar, wind, and renewable energy incentives or tax credits for these alternative energy projects. There are three areas that need not only quantification but clarification: the return on investment for clean energy generation, renewable energy generation, and energy efficiencies. In 2007, the legislature enacted SB 838, which created the Oregon Renewable Portfolio Standard, the RPS as it's known, mandated that by 2025, 25% of the electricity produced from Oregon's three largest utilities would come from renewable energy production. The remaining electric utilities in the state, depending on the size, have standards of 5 and 10% or 10% by 2025. Renewable energies include biomass, geothermal, hydropower, ocean thermal, solar, tidal, wave, wind, and hydrogen sources. This is to be achieved through escalating quotas on the utilities doing business in the state. To date, not a lot has been accomplished through the technologies of biomass and geothermal, which are some of the most prolific resources that we have in eastern Oregon. Many bills promoting these energy sources have been brought to the legislature, but few have been given hearings. A similar situation exists with the marine-related technologies. Basically, I would just really encourage passage of this bill because I think it's so important for us, with so much money being invested in the renewable energies, to know, are we getting a good return for our investment in many ways, environment, for business, for schools, for state, for citizens. And so that's why I'm here. I just think it's generally a wonderful bill, and as is Representative Benz's bill also. Thank you.
Okay, questions for this committee? Representative Rudin.
Well, I think this is great, absolutely what we need to do. Just wondering, would this kind of set us up for future, maybe ongoing reporting that might occur? This looks like a snapshot approach.
Thank you, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Rudin. The bill, as it's currently drafted, would would sunset, I think, after the first reporting round. It could be continued. It says that the bill is repealed effective January 2nd, 2018, so it doesn't establish an ongoing duty, but it could be continued. You know, in my view, I come from the foundation sector. You know, I used to work at the Meyer Memorial Trust, and one of the things that they really focused a lot on was performance measurement and identifying the value of the outcomes of the investments that they made. And I personally would love to see this type of work happen in this portfolio and across other portfolios that we invest in as state government, not just as one-time options, but in an ongoing way. But you have to start. You have
right.
to start with one step, and
good.
Perhaps there would be more.
Rep. Holby.
Thank you. I think this bill's off to a great start, and like the direction it's going, I'm wondering, when you list all the things that could be considered in this, is the goal to actually establish dollar values for each of these items?
So, thank you, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holby. My goal, after speaking with representatives of the Department of Energy, was to provide for the fact that they maybe haven't been using the same performance metrics across programs, you know, from 2007 forward, and so trying to leave it somewhat open-ended for them to define parameters that they actually could measure for in a reasonably consistent way for which they had data or information, so that they had some discretion about what to define. In the retrospective look, I actually received information back from them that they think it would be more helpful for us to narrow the parameters. And in this March 20th memo that is on OLIS that contains some amendments they think would be helpful, they define instead parameters on page 2 that they recommend we incorporate instead of my more open-ended ones. You know, choose your parameters of things that connotate value and tell us to what extent you're getting value from those things. Instead, they'd like to do these, and I'm comfortable with that. And I think, you know, as we develop prospective parameters, if we want to have parameters that are more qualitative or along the lines of some of the things that they don't feel like they have information for, perhaps in my original draft, we could encourage them to include those as yardsticks going forward.
Harper.
So would you anticipate, what sorts of things do you think would be included in the evaluation on a return on investment? Is it just dollars and cents, or are there some of the other values that, you know, we as Oregonians might embrace?
Well, the bill, as I conceptualized it, was trying to account for the whole array of reasons why we make green energy investments. So things like, you know, energy resiliency increased, perhaps air and water quality improvements, carbon footprint decreased, local jobs created, local markets created or supported, you know, a range of things. But the things that they have identified, I'll read them to you as parameters that they propose for the retrospective look, are total cost of the program, eligible project costs, projected total costs of projects who receive funding under the program, impacts on employment, total tax benefit to the state anticipated to be received from state and local taxes, energy conservation and efficiency in the form of energy savings, reduction in carbon emissions achieved through the program, infrastructure improvements related to projects, industry development and market transformation, other benefits, costs, or impacts identified, which might be unique to to each category. So,
okay. Thank you.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks for this bill. And I was really pleased to have the opportunity to sign on to the bill.
Oh, yeah.
Because as we were talking a little bit earlier this week, it is very difficult for me as a new member to understand how we're managing all of our incentive programs. And I really appreciate the potential for a framework for that. And my question's a lot like Representative Reardon's, in that I look at the list and I see a lot of a good analysis that can happen. And as the drafters, I want to make sure that I understand whether you think also within that list we'll be able to account in some way for both avoided costs of of more environmentally harmful methods of energy generation, and at the same time, mechanisms for assessing externalized costs of the way we make energy now and how we might be able to rationally reduce those. Because I think we all pay for externalized costs, and driving those as low as we can in a responsible manner is probably a good idea for the state.
That's fine. I was just going to make another comment.
It was a question.
Well, no, that's fine. I was just going to say the list of things that the Department of Energy has come back with. They propose additional language to ensure the department's loans programs are included, including, so this would be information on the BETCE, the Residential Energy Tax Credit, the RETCE, I guess, Energy Conservation Tax Credit, Transportation Tax Credit, Renewable Energy Development Grants, Biomass Producer or Collector Tax Credits, State Home Oil Weatherization, State Energy Loan Program, and Alternative Fuel Vehicle Revolving Loan Fund. So they want to make these specific so they can, you know, it's not just really broad inclusive of everything, but they specifically are suggesting that they can come up with the answers that we need on those programs also.
Right.
Thank you.
So, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Helm, they did say to us that they wanted to specifically delineate programs to measure that they have lots of operating and implementation control over. I think that they are engaged in a lot of programs that are mainly run or implemented by a different agency, and so one of the pragmatic steps that they took was, can we limit the universe to a certain set of programs that we specify that we feel like we can give you meaningful information on? And we said that sounds reasonable. As to the additional parameters that you mentioned, Representative Helm, I would be game for including those in an amendment, or, you know, trying to talk to ODO and Ledge Council to see if those are parameters we could measure for. I think the key issue is going to be cost. You know, there, I'm sure we can measure for all kinds of everything, but there are probably different costs for different types of parameters. But I think that those are really important points. So if you'd like to work together on trying to make that happen, I would be happy to try to make that happen.
Madam Chair, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Not trying to suggest amendments, but it seemed to me that within that list, and again, looking at those specific programs, I think you could, maybe even without an amendment, but even looking back at the legislative history we're creating here at this committee, help the department understand that would be valuable information for us.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for your testimony on the bill. A couple lines of questioning. The amendment in here, I think that ODO sent out, actually wants you to emphasize more a third-party entity to carry out this research or do this work. Is that right?
Yeah.
And if so, does anybody have any idea what the cost would be for that? Because we're talking about some pretty exhaustive work, it looks to me.
Right. Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson. Two things. I think the original intent behind having it be internal was cost containment. Mm-hmm. But I think we recognized that given all of the challenges that they're trying to move forward through and establish confidence in the public about the track that they're on, I think they might have even initiated that goal would be well met by having an arm's length third party entity do the assessment. So yes, they did. I think it was somewhat mutual, but they definitely get credit for initiating that was a good idea. And yes, it would cost. There, you know, there's definitely cost associated with this. I think the first year cost, we'd have to get a fiscal back from them, but the first year cost, I think, could be $1 million to do this wide range of stuff. And then there might be some smaller second year cost. It's not inexpensive, but spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on investment in renewable energy projects is also not inexpensive. And so it's a somewhat daunting fact, but I think the expression penny wise, pound foolish comes to my mind. I would hate to see us fail to carefully chart where we're trying to go, because we're trying to save a buck and then end up squandering community resource that could be spent on education because we didn't know.
Well, so are you suggesting that that cost would come out of ODO's budget? They would just electively make that determination to spend X number of dollars, whatever the cost would be? Or is that something we have to appropriate?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson, I think that that's a material question, and I don't come with an answer to that question here. I can imagine that they were not hoping that it would come out of the budget that they currently have, but I think that they are subject to the laws and the funding allocation decisions that we make. So that will require more thinking. Do you have a suggestion on how that should work?
I'm looking for a fiscal in here, and I'm not seeing it listed anywhere, so at this point in time, anyway.
Right. I'm sure the only reason you don't see one is because it's too soon.
Okay. One more follow-up, if I could. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. As we talk about the components or the items to be investigated, impacts on employment, total, tax benefit to the state, energy conservation, efficiency, and so forth, I wonder if we shouldn't also, and again, we look at words like market transformation and so forth, and I guess as we talk about benefits, transformation, we know that one man's or one company's benefit could be to the detriment of another industry or another business. That certainly is possible. Is there a way to put language in here, perhaps, to where they could say, this sector of the economy has thrived under these new policies that have been implemented, but this sector of the economy has not done well? And then rather than let ODO be the determiner or the arbiter of whether that's a good benefit for the state of Oregon or not, that'd be the legislature to come back to us and say, gosh, we didn't know we were doing this to this economy, or we didn't know we were doing this to this business. Is that possible?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson, I think that that is reasonable, and in fact seems to be the same thing that Representative Helm was saying when he was talking about externalized costs. Mm-hmm. How does the good thing that you're doing over here affect,
right,
adjacent enterprises? I think that you are doing a good job of establishing legislative history, and I'd be happy to include reference in the bill to needing to have a court sense, not just a individual player sense of how these things are going.
Thank you.
I think that it's both of those pieces, right? It's the external cost that we're not now capturing in when we do a fiscal on a program, and we're looking at trying to figure out a problem. And then it's also the secondary, like when it's getting capturing the whole picture so that we have a better opportunity to make decisions as lawmakers. We have, a couple bills in this committee on this. We have some in revenue looking at exactly the same thing. I think we're going to have Rep. Davis has a bill that we're going to hear next week that's on it. So it's obviously something that we need the data that's out there. And if it's not out there, then we need to make sure that agencies have the tools to start doing that. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the return on investment concept is really interesting, and I would like to get your thinking on the definition of that term. The difficulty that I think everyone is debating here on how one measures each element of the return on the investment, and the incredible subjectivity that may come into play as one encounters carbon reduction or all those externalities. Do you have any thoughts on how we can avoid the difficulties that are going to come up as we wander off into that arena?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, thank you so much for that question. I will promise you one that we will not measure the gross domestic happiness of these programs, so that's one thing. at least not by my initiative. I think that causation and quantification of benefit is tough. I think that, I am not a... outcome measurement specialist by training. I think that we endeavored, by virtue of the tighter, of the shorter list of parameters that they sought, for which they sought measurement, to try to narrow to some pretty tangible parameters what would be measured for. But I can imagine that it would be appropriate to work again with the agency and with Ledge Council to try to make sure we're seeking information that is gettable and gettable at a price that we can afford.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
I have not given this enough thought, and that will become apparent when I come down to testify. But the issue is, I think, the trying to get to a point of seeing how well we're doing with these programs. But the measure of how well is the question. Is well because it reduces CO2? Because when we see the word clean, you'd kind of think that's where we're going, I guess. And then if so, is the measure then the cost per ton of CO2 reduction? And if so, then do we start looking at, does that give us a foundation to measure the value of that program against other programs? And if so, do we take into account all the realm of available CO2 reduction programs? And so, because I don't want to stop, as we just did in revenue, at the point of screaming victory when we reduced CO2 by one ton. That seems to me to be inadequate. So I'm wondering if this bill gets us to the point of prioritizing, being able to prioritize or measure these programs against what? And so would it be on a cost per ton of CO2 reduction that we say, oh, that we got somewhere with this study? Or is there something more that we're asking?
The Department of Energy, in their amendment, is suggesting that we strike the term state's return on investment for each program and substitute it with economic impact, costs, and benefits to the state for each of the programs listed, which are the ones. And I completely understand what you're saying, and I think that they're narrowing it down. How they're going to decide what is the economic impact kind of falls under the same thing that you're asking for, you know, the CO2 reduction, basically. How much is that? But I think if we can determine costs and benefits, perhaps that will send us more towards the direction that we want to go. And yes, I know benefit is a really broad term, but certainly cost is one thing that could be completely non-subjective, if you will.
Yeah. Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, I agree with what Representative Wissett just said. I think that the product of this assessment is less likely to be a dispositive, clear answer on exactly where we should invest and exactly where we shouldn't invest, but rather some good information on the costs and the benefits that we get so that we can make policy decisions, you know, messy policy decisions about where we think investments, scarce resources should be directed with better information.
Madam Chair? So I'm going to guess that there may be some people signed up to testify about at least cost analysis and how that comes into play now as the measure of the good. And so I'm not, that takes us to the cost piece, or that is the return on investment, which I think is the cost piece very nicely. But I do not know if that's the entire picture that we're seeking when the programs this bill targets are all, quote, clean energy programs, renewable energy programs, energy, all going toward an outcome which I think is CO2 reduction. I could be wrong. It might be maybe to drive down the cost, but I believe it's targeted towards CO2 reduction. So we can go in and start talking about the cost that we're incurring, but if we don't look at the other side of it, the return, I don't know how it makes much sense, but that's my question.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, I think you raise a great point. I would be delighted to work with you to try to put together something that you feel like helps address this issue. I'm not sure that I have more that I can provide as a response today, but if you feel like it would be useful to tailor this so that it is not my single-minded goal to get to CO2 reduction. I just think that is one parameter of many, perhaps, that would constitute a benefit. But what we need to try to figure out is, what are we getting? What community benefit are we getting for these dollars that we're putting here instead of in other important places, such as, you know, a full school year for our kids? And in order for me to be able to, I know that there are some wonderful bill proposals that people intend to bring on large-scale solar projects, on renewing the Red Sea, on all kinds of things that might be good, but it would be easier for me to vote on those if I felt like I had a clear sense of what the various benefits are of the money that we spend in this arena. And perhaps since you've been at this business longer than I have, you do have a really encyclopedic sense of that. But I feel like we, you know, progressive people like me don't benefit our interests if it seems like we are not looking at the outcomes of our expenditures. And people very focused on fiscal discipline similarly want to have a clear out set of information about what we're getting in exchange for our expenditures. And perhaps this is a time when all of us have the same goal, and we'll get data, maybe we'll use it for different purposes, but by having the data, we'll be able to make better decisions.
One follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with that last remark completely. That is, that to the extent data can be gathered, which is far less subject to subjectivity, then hooray. Then we can use that as we will, spin it however we might. But the data would be great. My questions so that I can better understand where we're trying to go with this exercise, and so that we don't turn a whole bunch of people loose and come back with a whole bunch of stuff that we never use. When I think that the goal of clean energy and all those other programs was to reduce, for the most part, CO2. I think that was the reason that they were ginned up. Perhaps I'm wrong, and there'll be other benefits there. Maybe at the time they were instituted, people felt we were going to run out of natural gas. That now appears less likely, but perhaps, I don't know. But if that was one of the reasons to engage in clean energy, then that would be one of the benefits that would appear in the study if we so design it. But I would be happy to work with you, Representative.
I'd just like to say, I agree, it's a problematic question, and I signed on to the bill because I feel it's a first attempt to actually quantify some issues regarding cost with the entire green energy programs and what we're getting for them. And I personally would like to see maybe silos that tell us what did it cost, what, you know, so we have numbers on things, and then we can work from that point on and see, you know, obviously there will be interpretations of it that will be different, but if we could actually have a place where we have a list of what everything has cost us to date, and you know, how much carbon is saved, and you know, what is the cost to our state and our communities and this sort of thing. So I may be viewing it a little differently, but I like the idea of having specific numbers to work with in different categories, and then we can see, you know, we can have a number of different people take a look at them and decide, you know, the legislature, is this working for us? Do we need to go on with it, or do we need to stop certain things? So that's my view.
Representative Reardon.
Oh, thank you. I'm not sure if this is a question or an observation, but the more we talk, the more I am concerned about the return on investment on this test. Having designed and worked on a few, research. It seems like every question you ask generates about 10 additional questions. So I think it's just a suggestion. Maybe we look at, you know, can we slice this and maybe do it in a couple of layers? And maybe it's this time out, we do all things measurable. It's actual cost benefits, carbon reduction, anything we have actual data on, and then see what we get. And then decide, you know, what are some of the softer things, if you will, that are maybe harder to measure. I don't know, jobs and economic development fit into that category, or whether they're part of the first test. But I keep saying test. I'm sorry, I've had test on my mind today. But the research, and see if we can keep the report itself under control.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Reardon, I absolutely agree with you, and I want to read to you the suggested change in nomenclature that Representative Whitsitt pointed out. ODO actually suggested that we ditch the language of return on investment, which maybe is bigger and more abstract or expensive to generate information on than we have appetite for right now. And instead, they suggest we define this as we hire a third-party contractor to conduct an economic impact analysis and benefit cost analysis study of the state of Oregon's past and current incentive and loan programs to support development of renewable energy, alternative transportation fuels, and energy efficiency. So they have tried to tailor and narrow language that I used, which was maybe term of art language or too broad, to things that they think are more specific.
And can be measured.
Right.
Okay. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I commend both of you for bringing this, or Representative Leininger, wherever it started. I'm not sure.
Teamwork.
So, but as a fellow progressive, liberal, social conservative, libertarian, capitalist.
Communist socialist.
Now you guys who have been confused on where I stand, you know, because there's no confusion in my mind. But the reason I make that statement, it brings out what we need to do. Actually, I forgot to throw in doomsdayer as well, so because that comes into play in energy. And one of the things we need to look at is all of the above. And I commend you for bringing this, because it's basically getting to that point. Because one of the things I have, it used to be in my district till redistricting, but just right on the edge is a large landfill. And people complain about this mountain of trash and the smell and everything. Yet right up here in Brooks, we have an incinerator. These are things that I think we should be looking at it using, because, yeah, there's a little more carbon coming out of that incinerator than you would get out of a gas-fired plant or power plant. But is there benefit for the state of Oregon and the residents of Oregon? Huge benefit. So you're not getting a new ski mountain of trash. You're getting your trash dealt with in a manner that provides back to communities. And it's subsidized through your rates that you pay for garbage and everything for making that. So those are all items that I think we need to be looking at, and I think that's what you're trying to get at when I'm looking at this bill. So I commend you for bringing this forward, because, I mean, to me that has a huge environmental impact as well as a great impact for ratepayers and everybody in the state of Oregon and looking at those benefits. So as a fellow progressive, liberal, doomsdayer, conservative, capitalist, I commend you.
Thank you.
How'd you do that?
Social conservative, I forgot to throw in, too.
There you go.
Representative Polby.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I don't want to be redundant on all these remarks, but, you know, I appreciate the thought about, you know, looking more specifically at the costs and the return on investment, things we can quantify, and that data. I really think that's really good to separate that out and you know, narrow in on that if we want ODO to, you know, really produce something that's meaningful. But I don't want to, you know, totally walk away from the concept of the bill, because some of the benefits, especially maybe not the cost, you can quantify the cost maybe a little bit easier, but some of the benefits, like the, the program's contributions to the state's preparedness for emergencies. Very difficult to put a dollar figure and quantify that benefit, but it's extremely valuable. So I think we need to think about separating out another category for some of those more subjective values or benefits that some of these programs may deliver and maybe not really intend to, get them into the actual return on investment type of notion. But they are definitely values that we should recognize for some of those, I think. So thanks.
May I just say, absolutely. I'm very impressed that the Department of Energy is willing to work on this bill and come forward with some really good suggestions, in my opinion, and try and open up this entire venue, if you will, make it transparent. And I really think that's important, and I'm impressed with the suggestions that they've made in their amendment by delineating specific, loan programs and things. I mean, it's really going to help, I think, make a greater clarity for the department and for the citizens and the legislature, because we're asked to make decisions every day on laws that we don't always know the background on. It's very hard to find information right now on certain things. Cumulative, numerical summations, basically. So,
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holvey, I agree with what you just said, and I think you're right that maybe there's room in their assessments of these programs to describe in a narrative, some of the additional benefits that maybe they can describe uniquely for one program. They can't describe uniformly across all programs because it's not. Right. It's not that kind of universal parameter, but I think you're right that we would be leaving some value on the table if we didn't ask the assessor to take a look at that too. And I like that in the draft, changes to parameters that they provided. They do have a couple that are sort of, environmental qualitative. They're not exclusively those, but they have a final catch-all category, which I think could capture. Which could be the placeholder for that parameter. Other benefits, costs, or impacts identified by the department. Mm-hmm. We could say to them, can you talk to us about that, particularly when it's useful? So,
thank you both so much for bringing this forward. I think we've exhausted you with questions, but you can tell this is something that's really important to the work that we do on this committee and other committees in this building. And I know that having spoke with the Department of Energy, they're happy to continue working with you on the amendments. And when the final amendments are drafted, they're going to come and talk to us about those amendments as well.
Thank you. And we will follow up with folks among you who seem to have input so that we can make sure that your ideas are reflected. And if you have any additional ideas or suggestions, come talk to Representative Whitson. I'm kidding. Please come talk to me.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So the next, there's not very many people, just one, Jeff Bissonnette. If there's anyone else here in the room who'd like to be heard on 2627, please come forward at this time. I know. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Bissonnette for the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon, representing residential ratepayers. Very short comments, basically endorsing the conversation that we just had. This is a good topic to look at, and capturing some of the comments that Representative Helm talked about. When we look at these sorts of things from a ratepayer standpoint, we're really looking at sort of the energy side of things and kind of the resource acquisition side of things, and a lot of times. At the PUC process, you have some parties saying, well, what about all this other stuff? What about economic development? What about public health? What about this? What about that? And, at the end of the day, that's not a concern within the economic regulatory environment of the PUC. It really is this kind of discussion and a tax side where we can look at that and we can figure out, you know, what we do want to look at. And in terms of that, I think that from a policy perspective, the committee needs to be clear sort of the full length of things that they that you want to look at, and then it becomes a budgetary issue in another committee of, you know, really what can you know, what can the state afford to do, assuming we do head down this road. I would endorse the concept of a third-party evaluator. I know at on the utility side and energy efficiency side, that's standard practice and really does build trust and confidence in the information that's being developed. And I think that's something that is very important to the Department of Energy and trying to regain trust and confidence. They're working very hard at that, and I think that would be a good step to continuing that process. I'll stop there and happy to answer questions if people want to get into detail on anything.
Any questions for Jeff? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff, you know, cause I've thought about this and how to get at it, and the third party I'm very supportive of as well. But some of this, the companies, they know with some of this technology where things are going to be at, and I wonder if it wouldn't be something where we actually look at having them come to us with the benefit for projects, because I'm sure all the companies out there, Pacific Core, PGE, they're looking at different technologies, things out there, and if they can come and we set basically this is what we're looking for, now they're coming with projects like an incinerator. Hey, we'll take care of your landfill issues, we'll take care of this, and we're able to generate power at 4 cents a kilowatt or 5 cents a kilowatt and 50 megawatts at it for this area, allowing, setting up some guidelines for them to allow them to be innovative and look for technologies out there to start bringing to the table as well. Because industry, once you set this is what we want, they're going to achieve that goal. And I'm wondering if we shouldn't look at doing something like that for making Oregon a better place.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, I think that that is probably a conversation in the next stage of the conversation. I think what we're looking for now is a real assessment as to how dollars have been spent, are being spent, and once you have that evaluation in place, you can then say, how do we want to spend you know, our dollars? It could be that you say everything is fine thus far, and we want to continue that. It could be that, say, you know, these programs have kind of run the course of their usefulness, and so we either want to redirect them to other state needs or redirect them to other energy needs. But I think before you have that conversation, you need the data that folks have been talking about here, and that's kind of phase one of that conversation. And I would say that the conversation that you're having is probably phase two, but there's a bunch of different ways to structure the conversation, but that would be my first first instinct.
Okay, thank you so much. All right, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2627 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3091. Beth, could you provide the committee with a summary of this bill? Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3091 would direct the Department of Environmental Quality to conduct a study of the state's return on investment and state programs to reduce carbon emissions. This would be for the period beginning July 1, 2005 to June 30th, 2014. There's no fiscal or revenue impact information as of yet.
Thank you. Representative Pence. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you very much for hearing this bill. Colleagues, I've become convinced that much of what we're trying to do in this state when it comes to carbon reduction is an incredible waste of money. And the real sad part about it is there's no way for me to prove it. And when I say that, it's not because of the intent, which is to reduce CO2. It's because we don't have anything to determine whether or not the means that we are using are best suited for the outcome wished for. So thus the bill. Now, the bill is inadequate and needs a lot of work, as the most kind thing I can say about it. And it it's inadequate in the respect that it only talks about state programs, and it should talk about the state mandates also. It also should talk about what we're already doing, so that if we are serious about CO2, and we should be, the issue is, where are we, where do we start? What is that carbon report card? And there's been attempts. I know the Climate Trust and others have done work to try to figure out where the state stands when it comes to overall carbon. And when I say that, I mean, what are we doing with our forests? How are they doing when it comes to carbon sequestration? What are we doing with our water, our range, and the huge size of the state? What is it that we're already paying for when it comes to carbon reduction? And this bill does not adequately call for that summary. Why is this important? It's important because we are a small state, and what we should be doing is targeting our investments in the most rational way when it comes to this, the outcome we're trying to achieve. And the only way we're going to determine that is by figuring out what we're doing already and then look at the alternatives that we have available. That was the purpose and intent of the bill. I must say that I've become convinced after doing much reading and a bunch of other interviews and discussions about this, that the solution rests not in any of the programs we currently have, but in research, in trying to find something that would work worldwide. And I know you heard me talk about this as we were debating the low carbon fuel standard, and my suggestion, of course, was that we invest more in Oregon State, U of O, and PSU, and all the smart people that we've got in this state to try to figure this out for us. I still think that is in the right direction of how to address this issue. But we have to start somewhere, and this bill is an attempt to at least look at what we're already doing and then hopefully look at what we're paying for what we're already doing and then perhaps do something maybe more directed in the outcome we want. I just want to mention the numbers I'm going to use tomorrow in my 5 town hall meetings across Baker County. I will be showing them a couple of slides that have been put together to show the incredibly modest footprint of carbon that Oregon is in relation to the rest of the world. In the total state is around 60 million tons of carbon a year. The United States, 500 billion. I hope I have this right. About 15 billion, there we go, 15 billion tons in total worldwide, 10 billion from China, 10.3 to be exact, and 5.3 billion from the United States. And here we in Oregon are generating 60 million. And that number, the question becomes, if we're trying to drive down an already low number without taking into account the net impact of our forests and everything else, can't we be doing better? And shouldn't we be doing better? And the place to start is this bill. The idea, of course, is, and I'll talk again to my folks in 5 different town hall meetings across Baker County, what do you people think we ought to be doing? I'm very much looking forward to those conversations as I go across that part of the state. It's been really interesting. Most people know that we should be reducing carbon output when and where we can, but I think they want us to do it the smartest way. And so thus this bill, which needs a lot of work, but I'm so happy you chose to hear it, Madam Chair. And with that, any questions?
Questions? Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. I think this gets at the same type of question from the previous bill, but from a different direction, different agency, and I appreciate that. One of my questions is about the targeted programs that you're looking at. I think we're all aware that DEQ's mission is partially driven by the delegated authority from its administration of the Clean Air Act, the Federal Clean Air Act, and the Federal Clean Water Act, among. Is it your intent to look at both the mandated work that DEQ has to take on because we've decided to be a delegated state and optional programs?
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Helm. Thank you for the question. The goal of the bill is that we have an understanding of what we're already doing so in this state and what we're already spending money on, whether it's a federal mandate or whether it's of our own volition through this building. So, of course, we would want to know what we're already doing, whether it's under a mandate or not. so that we can in turn decide whether we need to do more. Because much of what we're doing here is in addition to already mandated federal activities. So how can, it, like the 111D rules that are coming into play and the other Clean Air, Clean Water Act matters, we should know. We should figure that out. And then we should say, gosh, maybe we're doing enough there. Maybe we should direct our attention elsewhere. And the only way to know this, though, is to understand, in relative terms, how much good we're doing with carbon reduction and what it's costing. Because the idea would be, gosh, if it's costing this much a ton to do it with the low carbon fuel standard or with the RPS or with the Betsy or whatever else we've dreamed up around here, maybe we can do it better somewhere else. And frankly, that's the kind of conversation I really hope we can get to. I don't think my bill gets us there, but maybe it gives us some of the foundation for that discussion.
Follow up.
And I agree with that goal. I'm just wondering if, for example, we just heard about the particulate standards that we're supposed to meet and the difficulty of doing that. If we are essentially by EPA mandated to get to that goal in a very prescribed number of ways, I guess I'm concerned about analyzing those methodologies that may be coming down directly from EPA and not very optional for the state. And we could analyze those and we could tell EPA, you know, we think we have a better way, and they could still say no. I guess that's the distinction I'm after.
I'm sure. Representative Helm, that's a great point. I would not want to be studying something knowing that we have to do it in any event. But we certainly want to know the cost that we must bear. And then as we sit here trying to decide what else we should do, we should say, well, wait a minute. This is already going to cost us millions over here to achieve this outcome. Why are we investing more? Because the idea would be if that particulate work and investment is going to achieve an outcome that we're all trying to achieve elsewhere here, why do it twice? Why do more of it? That's the question. But you're right. I don't want to be studying something that we know we have to do to no good end. So again, as Vice Chair Reardon indicated, designing the study is incredibly important. Designing the work so we don't inadvertently start doing things we don't need to be doing.
Madam Chair, one more.
Follow up.
And then I'll stop. Because we are talking about. What I think of as a and as an attorney, you might appreciate this, the standard of review here of rate of return. We were talking about a different standard of review with the bill just previous and the advantages, disadvantages. I'd be curious about your thoughts about a similar standard of review rather than rate of return on investments.
Return on investment. Madam Chair, Representative Helm, that is a great question, and whether it's a cost-benefit analysis or a return-on-investment analysis, what the proper analysis is needs to be determined. I'm not sure my bill is right. In some discussions I've had with DEQ and others, the suggestion has been made that it is a cost-benefit analysis might better achieve what we're trying to get at, and that's one of the shortcomings of the bill. It needs a lot of work and a lot of thought because it could cost a lot of money. But if done right, perhaps it could help this state do a better job of achieving what it's trying to do. But you're exactly right. That element of the study needs work. And the two could be combined, although they are somewhat different. I would just mention, looking at carbon reduction policy you'd want to take into account what you're already doing when it comes to sequestration. You really would, because there's a cost to it. There's a cost to preserving our forests so they're there to sequester carbon. We're not logging them. And so where is that cost taken into account? And all the type of things that we're doing to try to make sure that the state remains green, in essence, is perhaps something that we're not appropriately evaluating the cost of. And this might give us that chance. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. first of all, you have 5 town halls tomorrow? And that's after you drive 6-8 hours to get home tonight?
Only six.
Why so lazy?
Do you want to lobby for a speed limit modification?
50. I have a bill.
Yes. There you go. Do you see this study that DEQ could take on, examine what I don't think we ever contemplate, which would be, let's just say, a net carbon score for a state or for a jurisdiction, i.e., the assumption is always that whatever carbon is emitted becomes, that's all we're concerned with, but we really don't ever focus or we don't research what sort of sequestration and or storage is already naturally perhaps occurring due to landmass, due to what's growing, what do we have here that could be, you know, soaking that stuff up as well. So have you contemplated that to where we could perhaps change the paradigm a bit to where, you know, all states are not created alike and all regions are not equipped equally as well? But is that something you might have in view in this legislation?
Vice Chair Johnson, thank you for the question. I've looked into that. I believe that California has had incorporated that type of approach in putting together its cap and trade arrangement. We haven't done that here. Probably should. The concept is one that is really complicated. To me, being able to tell the people of Oregon what we're already doing is extraordinarily important, so that we can justify doing more. So that's one reason to do it. There are others. But, yeah, I think we should be looking at a net carbon number. But it's there are many reasons to do it, and so the answer is yes.
Would lead to a follow-up then. In addition to governmental interaction, let's say, in discouraging carbon production, we could also engage in activities encouraging carbon sequestration, i.e. planting trees, i.e. doing things that we know could be beneficial, perhaps, as we try to lower that net that may exist for the state of Oregon.
Madam Chair, if I may, I agree with that, but the question is that the best way to attack the problem?
Right.
And I would suggest that the reading and other investigation I have done suggests that nothing that we now know is going to solve the problem. Too big a problem. That would suggest that we ought to be investing in research and development to try to sort this out.
Okay. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see where you're coming from with this, Representative Mintz, and it looks like probably should be two or three different bills out of what's been proposed here, because the sequestration going into the carbon that's coming out of our forest and everything like that, we might find out the federal government's the biggest polluter in the state of Oregon. And I think most of us in this room already know that. So, and this would give us the evidence that we need to go to the federal government or EPA and say, hey, you need to let us do this type of work. So I'm sitting there, I was thinking of that part being out separately, and then I'm thinking on the R&D where we are looking at the engines and things like that and changing, could be going to electric cars, different vehicles as well. So I'm just wondering, is that kind of your thought process on this, is putting this into multiple vehicles, maybe do one little piece of the pie at a time and start attacking it?
Chair, Representative Widener, there is no doubt that this bill needs a lot of work. How it might emerge is a question. It might well fit better with the previous bill. Without appropriate management, it could be too difficult to ever do anything with. So you're right. Too many ideas. It could come out in different pieces. But I think that's a reflection of not having spent sufficient time on it before I got here today. But that's what we have hearings for, I think.
If I may follow up.
Follow up.
And that's kind of, I was looking at where pieces of this work in the previous bill and would make that bill better. But then I'm looking at all these different programs. And breaking it up, to me, is a good thing, because the more set of eyes that we have on something, the better job we're going to have. Where if we rely on one department, one agency, they're always going to be looking out for their own self-interest. That's kind of my thought on this.
Madam Chair, Representative Weiner, I'm thinking that would be a second or third step in the process to determine who's actually going to do the work. It probably would be best for us to figure out what work we want them to do first and then go from there.
So I thank you for bringing this forward. We may have some differences in terms of what we will find if we difference in opinions on what we would find when we do the analysis, but I think it's important that the analysis that we take a stab at starting to look at to do an analysis of that. So I appreciate you bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Next, we have Palmer Mason and Jeff Bissonnette.
Because of the forests that are in, we're shaping them so much.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I'm here today to speak on House Bill 3091. DEQ is taking a neutral position on the bill, and for the sake of the public record, I will share our concerns. But we recognize that House Bill 3091 raises a larger issue worthy of discussion, robust discussion, the role of information and analysis in making good public policy decisions. I think all of us understand how critical good information and analysis are to the legislative process. I was also asked to talk a little bit about how DEQ currently collects information and evaluates policy. And I'll start by saying policy ideas are rarely born in a vacuum or suddenly appear on somebody's whiteboard. Most ideas result from federal decisions, actions by other states, discussion with stakeholders, or legislative direction, whether that be statutory or budget related. In other words, policy ideas rarely arrive at DEQ without some prior evaluation and public discussion. If an idea moves towards implementation, DEQ is committed to robust public discussion about the proposal. The public process typically starts with a stakeholder group with representation from different interests that meet to inform DEQ's consideration of the policy. For major policies, DEQ works with stakeholders frequently for more than a year or with multiple stakeholder groups. In some instances where DEQ does not have in-house expertise or the issues are unusually complex, we engage outside experts to provide critical information analysis. That information is made available to stakeholders for their review and comment. Major policies typically travel through the rulemaking process that's outlined in the statutorily required Administrative Procedure Act. There are many important features to the APA, but I think two features stand out in this context: opportunities for public comment and an evaluation of fiscal impact. I will also note that the APA itself does not require a public hearing for every rulemaking, but ORS 468 does require DEQ to hold a public hearing for every rulemaking. When a statutory change is proposed, we often meet with affected stakeholders to actively solicit their thoughts and suggestions. Of course, as the committee knows well, any legislative ideas must survive this building where the public is public process, how do I say this, subject to a whole different level of scrutiny. Our commitment to robust public discussion is not mere rhetoric. In my time at DEQ, I cannot think of any major public policy issue where we didn't reach out to stakeholders extensively and at the same time provide multiple opportunities for public comment. With this in mind, I'll turn to House Bill 3091, but I want to pause first and make something very clear. My comments today should not be confused with criticism. We respect why the bill is being heard. It speaks to the larger issue of making well-informed policy decisions. Rather, my comments are intended to point out where the bill is unclear and where it would be difficult to implement. And I'll add, I appreciate the comments that Representative Benz made earlier about the bill needs lots of work, and I will say this a couple times, we were happy to engage in that work and be of assistance if we can. But for the sake of the record, I thought I would share some of our thoughts about the bill as drafted. Section 1 of the bill essentially requires DEQ to identify every carbon emission reduction program adopted by the state from July 1 of 2005 through June 30th of 2014 and then assess the rate of return for each program. I don't think anyone would be surprised to hear that this is not a simple exercise. A key question would be, what investments or programs are we talking about? The bill refers to all investments made through government expenditures, both direct and tax-related, and programs adopted for the purpose of reducing carbon emissions. To meet this test, must a program have been adopted with a primary purpose of reducing carbon emissions? If carbon emissions reduction was a secondary purpose, does the bill apply? And perhaps a more basic challenge
How does DEQ scrutinize the administrative and legislative record to clearly establish the purpose of programs that span dozens of agencies and in some cases were adopted years ago? A second question, how does House Bill 3091 contemplate that each program is assessed? Is it assessed standing alone, or are the programs assessed together? Section 1 directs DEQ to consider the total reduction in carbon emissions achieved when determining the state's return on investment. But what if the programs complement each other? Consider, for instance, the case of electric vehicles. The state has invested in charging infrastructure, but also at the same time, the state has encouraged compact development to promote the use of these vehicles. In this case, the DEQ tease out the reductions associated with charging infrastructure and land use policy separately, or does the bill contemplate a combined assessment? A third question, should DEQ evaluate the cost of benefits of carbon emission reduction programs? The bill actually doesn't explicitly require this analysis, but a fair reading of Section 1 suggests that such information would be central to assessing each program's return on investment. Cost-benefit analysis can be a useful tool, but it also stirs very intense debate. Issues on how to measure environmental costs and benefits, discounting future impacts to present terms, and the problem of uncertainty would commit DEQ to substantial time and expense. Along the same lines, I'll make a final comment about Section 1. The study required in this section, which must be completed within a year, would impose a heavy workload that we're not staffed for and require expertise that we don't have. Section 2 of the bill presents a different challenge. This section requires DEQ and Business Oregon to submit a report to the legislature by 2016 that evaluates carbon emission reduction programs implemented in 2015. For each program implemented in 2015, the report must describe the associated carbon reductions and further quantify the costs and benefits to Oregon's economy. The first step of this evaluation is more straightforward in an area where DEQ has some expertise, but the second step of quantifying costs and benefits to Oregon's economy is more difficult. DEQ has experience in collecting information on costs and fiscal impacts to businesses, and in some rare cases, we have contracted for a broader analysis of economic impacts. But Section 2 demands a different level of quantification. It requires an analysis of how each carbon emission reduction program implemented in 2015 affects the entire Oregon economy. To answer that question, DEQ and Business Oregon would need to develop an integrated model of the state's economy. To be comprehensive, the model would need to account for all imports and exports, industries, land uses, purchasing decisions, etc. And finally, to address the issue of time, the model would need to discount future costs and benefits into present terms. If the legislature directed us, we could develop this model, but the task would be expensive and time-consuming. There are other points I could raise about the bill, but I will forego the opportunity. I want our comments to be taken as constructive, and I trust that the committee understands that there are concerns and challenges with the bill from DEQ's point of view. In finishing my testimony, I want to return to an earlier point. House Bill 3091 has value as a catalyst for a larger discussion about the role of information in making well-informed policy decisions. While the bill, as drafted, is not ready for adoption, at least in the eyes of the agency potentially charged with implementation, the intent of House Bill 3091 is well-meaning and appropriate. I can say this because I've talked with Representative Bentz at some length about these issues over several sessions. DEQ and Representative Bentz may occasionally disagree, but he and other sponsors deserve credit for taking up this vital issue. If the committee decides to move forward with House Bill 3091 or related legislation, DEQ would welcome the opportunity to participate in the discussion. And we have a few ideas about how to improve the level of information analysis available for legislative decisions. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony and be happy to take any questions.
I think we'll take questions for Palmer now. Representative
Bentz. Yeah, no questions so much as a thank you to Palmer for coming up to my office and working with me on the bill and warning me of his comments in advance. And so I really do appreciate them and look forward to working with you further on the bill.
And Madam Chair, Representative Metz, we certainly welcome that opportunity. I appreciate that. We look forward to the discussion.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, Jeff Bissonnette for the Citizens Utility Board. I wanted to come up and say, again, some positive comments about the bill and the direction moving forward. I think that, you know, one of the things that stood out for me is, you know, analyzing programs adopted by the state for the purpose of reducing carbon emissions. And, you know, there haven't been that many, frankly, that have had that express purpose. There are a lot that we've done that have that as a sort of secondary benefit, but we heard some conversation about the renewable portfolio standard that's been in place for a number of years, and while that does have an impact on carbon emissions and should be a part of the overall approach for carbon emissions, that's not why it was adopted. Same thing for a lot of our energy efficiency programs and investments, again, have a very positive impact on carbon emissions, but it's not why they were adopted. And so I think the point of this bill is, right on target, is that we need, as a state, to be looking at what are we doing and what more should we be doing, because I think that, that we can – there's a fair amount of information that says what we're doing is making a difference, but it doesn't have emissions going down at the rate science says we need them to go down. And so we need to get on top of that and really figure out, as a state, how we do make further investments and, again, what's already working and what we need to build on. Because that is the sort of force behind this this bill, at least that's what I read into it. And so in conversations with Representative Bentz, where he's very clear where he's coming from, we would very much like to continue that discussion, have an opportunity to be part of that discussion, and hopefully that leads somewhere where we can make further policy decisions. Thank you. Happy to answer questions.
Any questions? Thank you both. Next, I'd like to call up Bob Russell and Brian Doherty.
Really amazing your comment that we should adopt a similar policy to California's cap and trade agreement.
May Mr. Freese come up with this?
Yes, Mike Freese may come up as well.
Thank you. My position on that.
Are you sure, Madam Chair?
He's not on the list, but we will.
I didn't say that. I apologize.
All right, go ahead whenever you're ready.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell with the Urban Trucking Associations. This has been a fascinating conversation this afternoon. And I really support the whole idea of figuring out what is the most cost-effective way of dealing with carbon emissions. My wife and I had the pleasure of going to China a couple of years ago, and we spent 3 weeks, and we saw the sun for 2 days. And there wasn't a storm the whole time. It was all emissions from vehicles and coal-fired power plants. I mean, it is incredible. This past winter, one of their major cities was shut down for 5 days because people couldn't get around because the pollution was so bad. So do we have a problem? Yes, we have a problem. But we have to deal with it in the most cost-effective way. It's been interesting. The first bill talked about the Department of Energy. The second bill talked about DEQ. And that's part of the confusion I see around this conversation. We probably should have a third bill, and that one dealing with the Department of Transportation, who is a major player in reducing greenhouse gases in this state. But people don't often know that. One of the things that I think we need to think about when we do this analysis is there just is an incredible amount of planning that's been going on to reduce carbon emissions. The Jobs and Transportation Act required ODOT to do a statewide greenhouse gas reduction plan, which they have been working on for the last several years. It also required the Portland metropolitan area or metropolitan organization, Metro, to develop a plan for reducing vehicle miles of travel within what is referred to as the travel shed, because a lot of people commute into Portland to work and all that stuff. And that was, they were to do that in conjunction with the Department of Transportation. I believe that the Lane County MPO has already also stepped up to that planning level. And there's some discussion about extending that to the other MPOs in the state. So we're spending millions of dollars on planning to reduce carbon, and yet until today, I have not heard a discussion of how we evaluate the cost effectiveness of those efforts. So I think that that is a really important point. Somebody mentioned earlier that we need to look at the stuff that we're already doing, and I couldn't agree with that more. The federal government has obviously got a lot of programs to reduce carbon emissions, and the sort of the best way I can explain what I'm talking about is by way of an example. ODOT recently did a study of the damage done by studded tires, and they concluded, and I probably get the numbers wrong, but you'll understand the point, that there's $44 million a year in damage done to our roads because of the use of studded tires. However, they concluded that the vast majority of that damage was repaired through routine maintenance operations. In other words, they weren't spending money to specifically address the studded tire damage. And that was a very small percentage of it. So if you think about what the federal government is doing and what we're sort of layering on top of that, how much are we really reducing carbon because of the efforts that we're doing, and how much of that would be reduced anyway because of the efforts of the federal government? So I think that that is an important thing to look at as part of this study. One of the things that I'm not sure that you're aware of is that ODOT developed a model, a computer model, and they called it Green Step. And when it first came out, they let some of us play with it and had different policy levers that you could pull on it and see if we met the 2050 goal for carbon reduction. And so there was fuels, there was all kinds of things. And so we started playing with the levers, and the only lever that moved the needle was research in new technologies and developing new ways to reduce carbon emissions. So earlier, Representative Bentz said that an investment in our universities to do research and development of new technologies, which we could then export from our state, and actually have an impact on the problem, I think is an excellent idea. So again, I'd like to support House Bill 3091, and I appreciate the opportunity to participate in this afternoon's conversation.
Good afternoon, Chair Peterson, members of the committee. My name is Brian Doherty, and I'm with the Miller, Nash, Graham & Dunn law firm. One thing I try to do with my fellow lawyers is confuse them as to what I do. So sometimes I call myself a retained advocate or sometimes a government relations specialist. But I heard something today that even better, Representative Leiniger came up with outcome measurement specialist. And I think I'm going to change to keep it equally confusing. However, then I think about my scorecard this session. I thought maybe that's too much emphasis on outcome. In any event, I'm here today to testify in support of 3091, particularly the concept. And I'll be very brief. I think there's several things you could use as tools in your toolbox. And measurements along the lines that Representative Helm talked about are perfectly fine, too. I think what we're talking about in carbon reduction is what's the cost per ton of carbon reduced. And I think it'd be helpful to look at this both prospectively and retrospectively, as well as comparatively. That, in other words, compare these programs and looking at carbon emission. My clients, in fact, I'm here testifying probably on behalf of all my clients, from folks that have wind and solar development to oil and gas to a large company that's a cloud computing firm that is looking how to better buy its energy. if you look at this prospectively, which this bill is retrospective, looking back at what's gone on and through 2014, but I also think you want to know prospectively what is the best way to go forward in a carbon reduction world. Similarly, comparatively, I know that the Washington CLU process looked at comparing carbon reduction strategies from carbon tax cap and trade to energy efficiency and all these, and that came up with some scorecards that talked about a cost for carbon reduction. In any event, I think this is a great idea to try and look at this. It will help you, I think, try and find the best solutions, and I support the concept. Thank you very much for letting me testify.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Fries, and I represent Associated Oregon Industries. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, even though I wasn't here in time. And thank you for the hearing, and thank you, Representative Bentz, for introducing House Bill 3091. I think this is a really good conversation. We certainly support the idea around this bill and kind of learning about what investments the state's making, and then what kind of return are we getting for those investments. It's an easy concept, I think, when you look at it from a business perspective, but it does become a little bit more interesting when you hand it over to an agency. And I think we need to make sure that we're clear in what we're asking for. So what are the costs? What are the programs we're looking at? And then specifically, what are we looking for as far as our return? And I'm happy to continue to work with Representative Bentz, the governor's office, and DEQ in how to make that happen. You know, we're often business, I think, in general, and AOI in particular, we have a very broad set of businesses that we represent with various interests in the climate debate and all across the spectrum. It's something I think as a membership organization, it's important for us to continue that conversation, and oftentimes not only do we have that conversation internally, but we have it externally, sometimes kicking and screaming into the conversation, but it's happening nevertheless. This type of analysis and the data that can be collected from doing this exercise is really important to help inform our membership and to make our, I think, not only just business decisions, but policy decisions. I mean, we have these conversations at a group level outside of the legislature, and then we come up with recommendations and policies that we advocate for and support. It's hard to kind of advocate or come up with a policy position in a vacuum. There's a lot of information out there, but it's not centrally located, and quite frankly, I think that it could help inform our conversations internally and make sure that we're having that when we talk to you all, that we're singing from the same sheet of music, essentially. And then we can make some of those policy decisions based on that information. So I look forward to continue the conversation. I think this is it's a good starting point. It sounds like that this bill will potentially go through several other iterations, and I hope and I ask that that you continue to involve us in those conversations. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if, with this process as it goes forward, are you going to join in with other efforts so that if somebody else is looking at the same kind of stuff, you know, that you'll all kind of get to the same table and look at it together. So you don't have to do the research if it's already been done, that kind of thing.
Madam Chair, Representative Boone. I think the idea is that whatever the analysis that we can agree should come out of this process, or whatever we're tasking DEQ with, then we all have that same information, so we're all able to look at it together and sit around the table together and not use my economist or my data. It will likely be my economist, but it will be the state's data that we use to support our position. And I think that that's a better spot to be oftentimes than where we're at today. So we may still have those disagreements as far as our next step forward, but I I think that those conversations will be more meaningful when we're still speaking from really the same information. And maybe we do or are able to come to the same conclusion that certain programs are less effective than others. So maybe we should continue to support other programs or improve investments in other programs that do have a significant return on investment.
Just a quick follow-up.
Because
there are other agencies, other efforts that are going on. And we just found this when we were doing some stuff through our Coastal Caucus activities. And sometimes people don't know about other groups. And you know what I mean? It's just like maybe there could be sort of a wide net cast and say, kind of like when you do an RFP. So that if you have the information, you have the data already done, you can put your efforts into this process as well. So that we get a true widespread eclectic picture of what's out there.
Madam Chair, Representative Boone, I don't disagree. I think the concern, obviously, with saying yes, that's a great idea, is I'm a little concerned about what information comes in, and then is kind of stamped with approval through the process. So I would want some kind of filter to make sure that it is accurate information and it's not subject to significant bias or I want to make sure it's objective.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much for your testimony. All right, that's everyone. Is anyone else here to testify on this bill? Okay, if not, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3091 and close the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee. House Energy and Environment Committee.